Environmental activists, climate change extremists, and politicians around the world are hell-bent on achieving net zero by 2050, or some such date. What could possibly go wrong? Welcome to Created to Rain, a production of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, a nonprofit think tank dedicated to educating the public and policymakers on biblical earth stewardship, economic development for the poor, and the Christian worldview, ethics, and faith. Our aim? To help people everywhere fulfill God's mandate in Genesis 1:28 to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and everything that moves on the face of the earth. What does that look like, you ask? It looks like enhancing the fruitfulness, the safety, and the beauty of the earth to the glory of God and the benefit of our neighbors, and so fulfilling the two great commandments to love God and to love neighbor. I'm Cal Beissner, president of the Cornwall Alliance, and today I want to explain why I consider the demand that the world, or any country, reach net zero carbon dioxide emissions is utterly insane, indeed suicidal. I'll start out with an example of the kind of reasoning that leads me to that conclusion. This reasoning is by John Kerry, President Joe Biden's special envoy for climate, and it's found in statements he made about a year ago. After that, I'll turn to the broader question of why it's insane to pursue net zero, period. Back then, Kerry demanded a huge reduction in greenhouse gases from farming, which allegedly generates about 10-12% of emissions, and the rest of the world's food system as a whole, processing, packaging, transporting, etc., which generates about another 20% for a combined one-third of global emissions. Why? Because, as Kerry explained, without cutting agricultural emissions, we can't limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, which would be 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit. And why is that so important? Because, Kerry claims, only by staying within that limit can we avoid the worst effects of climate change. A 2-degree future could result in another 600 million people not getting enough to eat, according to Kerry. You can't continue to warm the planet while also expecting to feed it, he says. Well, there are all kinds of reasons to doubt that a 2-degree Celsius rise in global average temperature would devastate global agriculture. We might start with the fact that the greenhouse warming theory says warming happens mostly toward the poles, mostly in winter, and mostly at night. And why is that important? Because it means that most warming is in places and times that are cold, and cold is far worse for agriculture than heat. Global warming lengthens growing seasons by making the first freeze in autumn later and the last freeze in spring earlier. So it expands the area we can farm successfully and allows multiple cropping in places where it can't be done in a colder world. We might also point out that the higher concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which Kerry and other climate change alarmists blame for most of the warming, enables plants to grow better in both warmer and cooler temperatures, in wetter and drier soils, to make better use of soil nutrients, and to resist diseases and pests better, resulting in an average 35% improvement in plant growth efficiency. All of those, too, expand plants' growing ranges, and it also makes more food available for everything that depends on plants, meaning all the rest of life on Earth. Oh, and by the way, who benefits the most from that? Poor people, for whom food gets more affordable. But let's leave all that aside and just focus on Kerry's claim that, quote, a 2-degree future could result in another 600 million people not getting enough to eat. Unquote. Suppose that's true. Does that mean we must at all costs prevent that 2-degree future? What if what we did to ensure that 600 million people got enough to eat meant that 4 billion people, or maybe even 6 billion people, would die? That's what Bjørn Lomborg, head of the Copenhagen Consensus Center and one of the world's leading authorities on environmental and developmental economics, says would be likely if we brought our use of so-called fossil fuels to a screeching halt in the effort to curb global warming. But that's not what Kerry's talking about, you say. He's talking about farming, not fossil fuels. Well, not so fast. Most of farming's emissions of greenhouse gases are of nitrous oxide, which comes from nitrous fertilizers made overwhelmingly from natural gas. Half the world's population entirely depends on food grown with synthetic fertilizer produced almost entirely by natural gas, Lomborg points out. He continues, if we rapidly ceased using fossil fuels, 4 billion people would suddenly be without food. And that's to count just deaths due to depriving farming of natural gas-derived fertilizers. Additional billions of people depend on fossil fuels for heat, steel, cement, plastics, and transportation. Eliminating fossil fuels, which Kerry wants, would mean depriving people of all those things, too. So, Lomborg concludes, citing a study by economist Neil Record, the result would be around 6 billion deaths. Okay, then. Let's assume Kerry's right and an increase in global average temperature of 2 degrees would mean 600 million people wouldn't get, quote, enough food, unquote. Let's be really generous to Kerry and even assume that not getting enough food means not just that they're undernourished, but that they all die. All 600 million of them. If what we do to prevent 600 million deaths causes 6 billion deaths, or even just 4 billion, have we done well? But that's not all that's wrong with Kerry's demand. It ignores something else, too. It ignores the fact that, even according to the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, in its 2018 Special Report on Global Warming of 1.5 Degrees, unconstrained global warming would only reduce global production by about 2.6%. Well, that's bad, you think. We sure don't want to lose 2.6% of gross world product, do we? Hold on a minute. That would be 2.6% not from present production, but from production about 9 times higher than the present. Oh, you say, why do you say that? Because in moderate terms, according to the Center for Global Development, even with unconstrained global warming, we can expect about 3.1% annual growth in global production. From now to the end of the century, that would raise annual global production to just short of 9 times what it is today. In other words, with unconstrained warming, the average person in the world would be almost 9 times wealthier in 2100 than today. Do you suppose that would make people better able to afford food? If you said yes, go to the head of the class. And along the way, point out to your classmates that all that increased wealth has other life-saving side effects too, like better and more affordable housing, communication, transportation, education, and healthcare. Nonetheless, the same John Kerry who, a year ago, demanded drastic cuts in greenhouse gas emissions from farming, on March 4 of this year, cheered that, quote, we now have an agreement globally that we have to transition away from fossil fuel, that we have to do it with urgency, immediately in this decade, beginning now, unquote. Never mind about the ensuing 4 to 6 billion deaths. Thank goodness Kerry, aged 80, has announced he's leaving his job as Biden's climate envoy, though he does say he's still going to fight for net zero. Let's hope he doesn't have much fight left in him. Okay, so much for John Kerry. What about the general demand to pursue net zero? Here I'll draw further from Bjørn Lomborg. Writing in the Wall Street Journal on March 13, Lomborg made the following 6 points, which I summarize. First, climate policy needs to take into account the costs of draconian measures, which are enormous. Second, It is absurd to count only the benefits and not the costs of any proposed policy. For example, we could eliminate the roughly 1 million deaths worldwide from auto accidents by reducing speed limits to 3 miles per hour, but the consequences would be far more deaths from other causes. Third, saying just follow the science is a cop-out. Science might tell us how much warming comes from how much greenhouse gas emissions, but it doesn't tell us how to balance the benefits and costs of the warming and its causes. As Lomborg puts it, quote, "When politicians tell us we must follow the science toward extreme climate policies, they are really trying to shut down the discussion of enormous, unsustainable costs. We shouldn't let them." Unquote. Fourth, climate change brings some real problems, but so do other things. And fighting climate change might reduce our ability to handle those other problems. Fifth, risks from poverty far outweigh risks from global warming, as is made clear by the fact that, even while the world has warmed, human deaths from climate-related disasters have declined by over 98% on an annual basis. Sixth, while unconstrained climate change might, as I mentioned earlier, reduce global production by about 2.6% by the end of the century, from a level about 9 times what it is today, achieving net zero would cost an average $27 trillion per year from now to the end of the century, at which the annual cost would have risen to about $60 trillion per year. Those costs far outweigh any costs from climate change itself. Lomborg concludes, and I quote, "Our goal in forming climate policy should be the same we bring to traffic laws and any other political question: achieve more benefits than costs to society. A richer world is much more resilient against weather extremes. In the short term, therefore, policymakers should focus on lifting the billions of people still in poverty out of it, both because it will make them more resilient against extreme weather, and because it will do so much good in a myriad of other ways." Unquote. I couldn't agree more. Chasing net zero is insanity. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's program, please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. When you do, you'll help more people hear about Created to Reign. Also, please prayerfully consider supporting the Cornwall Alliance financially. And here's an extra reason to do so now. Our big new book, Climate and Energy, The Case for Realism, with chapters by 16 outstanding climate scientists, economists, energy experts, and ethicists, has just come off the press. And during the month of April of 2024, as long as our supply lasts, we'll send a free copy as our way of saying thank you to anyone who donates and requests it. Just go to cornwallalliance.org/donate, make your donation, and request the book Climate and Energy. Until next time, remember Micah 6:8. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with Him?